T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Right here on The Fan, 800-636-1067 is the telephone number you want to chime in here on the topic of the moment, which is, are the Redskins locked in to taking a quarterback at 15 or even trading up to get one? I think for me, you know how I feel about this, GP. We've gone around in circles on this over and over again. I don't want to do it for a number of reasons. Just even football-wise, if you believe that Jay Gruden won't be here beyond next year, to me, I'm not interested in making a quarterback that's a rookie who has to do enough adjusting as it is just to be okay in the NFL, have to start over all over again with a brand new regime and offense and everything else. But put my feelings aside for a second. Do you feel like the Redskins, this is just what's happening, they're going to come out of this draft with a quarterback?
I don't think that's the case yet, Danny. I think that everyone is pegging them as a team for a QB because it's the easy thing to do in a mock draft. And it's honestly what you probably should do. I mean, the easiest way to put together a mock is to go through and evaluate the quarterback-hungry teams and slot in those passers and those picks. I mean, those are the needle-moving selections. Those are the spots on a mock draft everyone's looking at anyway. They want to know where the quarterback's coming off the board, or if you're a quarterback-starved team, see Miami or Jacksonville or Washington. Those fan bases are probably looking at your mocks more than some of the other teams' fan bases are going to be. So I think it stands to reason that all these mock drafts coming out are going to have them going passer because it's very much viable. But I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think it's close. I think they could absolutely go with a wide receiver in the first round. I could see them going with the pass rusher, particularly if Preston Smith leaves with free agency. I think it's every bit as likely as quarterback if the right guy falls into their lap. The middle of the first round is a good range for an inside linebacker and a defensive back. That's prime real estate for the best safety or one of the best corners in the draft class. So I think they'll have a ton of options. I don't think they're going to zero in on just drafting a QB. Not to mention, we've had a couple of weird comments and things that have happened in the last 48 hours. The Redskins were interested in Joe Flacco, kicking the tires and poking around on yet another veteran who would have cost them a bunch of money. And Doug Williams talked about needing to, quote-unquote, mix a quarterback in this coming year. And you know, while he was talking rookie or veteran, you know, we know that he and Bruce Allen have both sided more often than not with going with guys with experience right over neophytes. So I don't think they're out of the business of still trying to find the right fit for a guy who started before. And I'll throw a random name out there, like a Tyrod Taylor type. I would not rule that out because we know that they don't want to admit that they're about to have a bad season. And if you draft a kid quarterback, that's what you're doing.
Interesting. Because I see it more as a, we're going to draft a kid for the excitement factor, right? Look at all these rookies that have fit right into veteran-laden teams and carried them to greatness right away, you know? Like, I mean, obviously he wasn't a rookie, but Pat Mahomes, it's the same. You know what I mean? He's walking into a great situation. I think they could probably try to sell that to fans because, to me, this is more than just a football decision. This is a selling decision. This is a, yeah, I know the house isn't in a great neighborhood. I know there's not that much good about the school system, but it's going to be good. Get in now. You know, they got to find a way to get people to watch the team, to get people to go to Richmond, to
no
get
doubt,
people to buy tickets.
You got to make a good football pick while you do that. Like, they're not going to take a quarterback they don't like just because he's a quarterback. I think what they're going to do, maybe you talk yourself into something, but they're going to pick the quarterback they like the most if they do that because, A, he's better than Colt McCoy the first day he shows up on your campus, whether that's Locke or that's Kyler Murray or Daniel Jones or whoever else. And, oh, by the way, we also get this great benefit of now having a commercial and a billboard.
I've gone back and forth on this, and each time there's a flirtation with Flacco or somebody says, well, maybe they could do this for Nick Foles, not really looking at the Redskins salary cap situation, I kind of go, maybe they will go that veteran route. I just have such a hard time believing they're going to let this much pass and this much of the iceberg kind of break apart and slowly slide into the ocean without trying to do something about it. You know what I mean?
You're coming around. I mean, are you out on, because you picked them to trade for a passer as recently as a week or so ago, right?
Yeah.
Are you starting to come around to the idea of they've got to draft someone just for the excitement factor? Because I go back to training camp 2012. It's not going to be on the level of trading up to number two to get Robert Griffin.
No.
Unless they were somehow able to get into the top five for Dwayne Haskins, which probably isn't happening. But remember the chanting at practice, and every move Griffin made was under a microscope. Even if you got a microcosm of that, if you got a quarter of that, it would at least be a reason for a news crew from Norfolk to come to Richmond for day one of training camp, and I think they do care about that.
Yeah, well, whomever the first-round pick is, I mean, go back in time. I mean, obviously less buzz with Josh Doctson, but bear with me. But I mean, I go back to, like, LeVar Arrington. The fact that he didn't start his first game, and that was what every newscast was doing, right? They were trying to get Greg Williams. They were trying to interview people to figure out, when is this guy playing? When's he playing? When's he playing? Because he jumped over the line of scrimmage that time, right, at Penn State. So, like, it's always been a thing that the first-round pick gets attention. When it's a quarterback, it's that much, you know, more, I don't know, kind of it's exponential in terms of the eyeballs and what people want to see and how soon they want to see it and then the external pressure. But it's also excitement. It's buzz for a team, an organization that has as little buzz as anybody in the world right now. You know what I mean? Just compared to what it was even a handful of years ago when they're 3-13, 4-12, whatever you want to say.
And it doesn't even have to be a good quarterback,
right,
by the way.
I know.
You know, we talked ourselves into, what if John Beck is really good during that lockout?
Yeah, what if it's a Kurt Warner story, you know, 2.0, right? What if it's
exactly.
The crazy one, right?
He was sending out the playbooks, and he was hiring a guy from his Mormon church to come in and record, you know, the walkthrough practices. The players were running themselves, you know, and they had, like, Lorenzo Alexander operating as the public relations director, like, organizing the media. I mean, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But we were talking ourselves into, well, what if John Beck's good? And, I mean, he could barely throw the ball 25 yards downfield without making a sound like Serena Williams every time she hits a tennis ball. I think people, they don't need the Redskins to draft a quarterback they really like. If you've got a rookie passer, that's one of the ways that you become a must-watch commodity. I've referenced this story a bunch, and that's evidence, I think, that it was really well done. But Liz Clark, who's fantastic with the Washington Post, wrote the piece, and this is going back now to the beginning of the offseason. But she talked to, like, a sports psychologist and then sports marketing people and a bunch of folks. And one of the experts in this story, when talking about basically how to stop the bleeding for the Redskins and how to get fans engaged again, they basically said, I think there were three different ways. And the ones that I remember were winning, and you can't just start winning.
Just do that real quick.
They would like to do that, but they're not able to do that, obviously. But one of them was basically to have a superstar player. And that was the 2012, you know, Robert Griffin jolt. Now, I'm not going to tell you Drew Lock or Daniel Jones is a superstar player. I don't really believe that they are. But they're going to be – it's a superstar position. And they're superstar names. And if you're ranking just the Q rating and the overall name value in the draft class, of the top 10 guys, they're going to be somewhere in the middle of that board with, you know, a couple of the best players at – some skill positions on defense. But for the most part, it's the five quarterbacks and maybe the top five other guys. So if you draft one of those three or four QBs that are in the top six or seven in terms of name value, you do get something out of that in the short term. If they can't play, it doesn't matter at all. And in fact, it probably just blows up in your face long term.
So in terms, to go circle back to answer your question, am I coming around to the idea? I mean, I'm still completely opposed to it. Like, I do not want this team that's going to go through growing pains, that's going to go through at some point a band-aid where all these older players, all the guys that were good who are past their prime, or in the case of someone like Jordan Reed, are oft injured, et cetera, and may never be what they were. I'll hear another offseason about how this is the offseason that's going to be different because he can train a certain way and his, you know, his spine will be aligned and whatever, right? But to me, they're going to have to go through pain at some point in the not-too-distant future. I don't want a rookie quarterback because you're basically dooming that guy to failure with this skill position group, with the potential coaching flux, with everything else. Now, they don't think like me. They think for self-preservation, talking about front office executives, especially ones.
Well, I was going to say, they don't have to go through pain, Danny. They refuse to do it. They should. They don't have to. They haven't gone through the pain that they're supposed to go through in years. What makes you think that they have to soon?
Well, they won't. I mean, I know, just knowing their thinking, or thinking, just deducing from the outside, They're going to do the thing that lets them keep their office. The thing that lets them keep their office right now is drafting a quarterback or having somebody new to print on a ticket, right? Whoever it is.
Yeah, so, could have been trying to trade for Joe Flacco and get the Ravens to eat a bunch of money.
Seriously. I mean, that's the idea. They know they can't just say, even though Jay Gruden probably would like to, we're going with Colt. He'll be healthy. He'll be fine. He'll be A-okay. We'll be all good. We're going with Colt McCoy. Get excited, because they know that won't get people excited. They know that there's a don't give a damn factor if that's what's trotted out there. They need a new signal caller. So they're going to be in the market somehow, some way. And the Alex Smith contract is prohibitive of them really getting a good one. You've got to find someone cheap and available, be that, you know, a Fitzpatrick trading for somebody's back end guy or the draft where salaries are controlled. So to me, I believe that they're getting a new one, which seems, that's not me being out on a limb. It's just somehow they're going to spend juice on it because they need it so badly for so many different reasons in that front office.
Danny, I don't want to cut you off, but I'm being told we've got huge breaking news on the flight. We've got to go straight to the DAR desk right now for an update.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So, I just want to point out that as of right now, we are still on time.
What?
But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 flights that take off within 10 minutes of us have been canceled.
Canceled altogether?
Canceled altogether. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 have been delayed.
Now, is this the same airline as you or different airlines?
One is the same airline that is canceled.
Canceled. Where were they supposed to fly to? Somewhere south?
Orlando.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Oh, that's terrible. You're cooked. You're done.
We are Chris cooked.
Us and 3 other flights are all still scheduled and on time.
We are Jack Kent cooked.
You're Matt cooked.
Oh, my God. We're Rachel Lee Cook.
You're, who's the old basketball analyst who always had
old
a highlighter in his shirt who was a basketball coach on ESPN?
Oh, I'm trying to think of who you're talking about. But
Jack?
I will supplement that with we are Dane cooked. I mean, done. Oh, man, this is bad. So what does it mean? No one told CK's not here. I need an adult.
I'm texting with CK constantly.
What does it mean?
It means
the flight's banged altogether.
We don't have a plan for that. We're just monitoring. I know how upset that makes you.
If the flight gets canceled, remember, Dar said you guys still win and I still lose.
Yeah, I disagree
with
that.
Still feel that way, Dar?
I don't.
Yeah, I do, because I don't have to spend the night in an airport.
Yeah, but you don't come to spring training.
Well, we come tomorrow. Potentially in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I
don't know about that. This
I'm going to have to text CK. Again.
This, by the way, my new least favorite word and term. I know we have to break. I never want to hear about monitoring a situation ever again.
Listen, I'm looking at the screen.
I'm not accusing you of anything.
I'm monitoring.
I know you are.
Our flight status.
You know what monitoring does? You wait for the whims of different people that make decisions. You got a screen up. Of course you're monitoring. We're all monitoring. I'd never want to be told we're just going to monitor the situation and have to see what happens. I don't want that. I want a solution.
Hey, guy, I came up with a name, by the way.
What is that?
Beano Cooked.
Beano Cooked.
You remember Beano Cook?
Absolutely.
Hilarious. Right.
Okay. I got to do a read here, Tommy. Is Grant and me both doing this? All right. We're not going anywhere. Our flight's canceled, so I'm going to have to make a good meal choice tonight. EMP went anyway, lost.
Still scheduled.
Yeah, it's still scheduled as of now.
By the way, the best part about this is you haven't gotten the actual gift that is the canceled flight early. You have to go to the airport and sit around and wait.
I know. Around a bunch of fast food. Oh, this is going to stink. But here's what doesn't stink. Losing body mass, losing fat, and keeping the muscle just like the pros do. Grant and me are just like the pros, minus the athleticism and the high performance aptitude. We have lost a combined 110 pounds on EMP 180 weight loss. These guys are great. They have a program that will work for you. It's not just one thing. It's not some universal thing that everybody has to do. They will tailor it to you and your needs. Change your life right now with our friends.
EMP 180, people. I was on the program and still am. Down 70 pounds, and I'm keeping the weight off. My brothers have lost a combined nearly 200 pounds. They've absolutely made my family not only healthier, but saved our lives, add years to our lives. And so many of the clients that I keep up with on social media and take good looks at, you know, their updates, their pictures, they look like different people at this point. Let EMP 180 impact your life for the better. Call them at 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180, or Google EMP 180.
The only fire in here is me being ticked off that this is not going to happen. So Dar, to update you all, showed me the status grant of all the flights leaving out of Reagan. Anything going north is canceled because that's where the weather's going. And the majority of what's going south around our 3:30 departure, also canceled.
Why is your 3:30 departure the last flight standing?
Right now, it looks like where the weather is, there's a clear shot that we might be able to get it in, so to speak, in the midst of some weather, in the midst of like a break in the weather. So the stuff to the southwest, like near, it's nearing Atlanta, it's closing in on that. That's headed east and kind of north. If there's a window, it's right at 3:30. So there's still a snowball's chance in hell that we can do this thing. There's also an overwhelming possibility that we get to the airport, they decide, you know what, it's not safe. We don't want everyone to explode. So you just sit here and twiddle your thumbs, and then we'll send you home at 10 p.m. tonight.
So my thought was not necessarily that you needed a window to get you out and up in the air at 3:30, but if the flights before it are all being pushed back, that, in other words, 3:30 is irrelevant because really it's 6:30 now.
Mm-hmm.
But if they cancel rather than delay a bunch of flights, then I guess yours would stay on schedule. Again, I guess I didn't realize that the weather in the moment of your projected flight time mattered at all. I just assumed you still go in the order that you were going to be lined up at the runway, and you just got to get the other flights out before you that were supposed to have taken off at 12 and 1 and 2 that are all delayed.
So that's kind of – that was my intuitive reaction. But then I think, like, somebody flying north doesn't necessarily affect us other than the 30 seconds that we share runway space, you know?
Well, that's fairly important. I mean, you ever been at an airport where there's 9 planes waiting to take off and you're sitting there for 25 minutes? What if it's 60 planes?
Yeah, we've done that dance certainly many times, taxiing and just sitting there waiting forever, and then they ground the flight and you have to get off and it's miserable. Everybody's done that. I guess the point I'm making, though, is if anybody going north, it's just not happening. So that's not as if to say, well, you're delayed and maybe it's going to go. They've canceled basically everything going north, right? So that's not in our way anymore. That's not just somebody being delayed and waiting and taxiing and runwaying. That's a, this is just not going to happen. Don't even bother showing up. There's less of a queue because there's only like a handful of flights that still might leave, if that makes any sense, right? It's not like they're sitting there with planes on the runway. These planes are parked. Nobody, or they're not even in town. They're like probably coming from somewhere else. They're, you know, the DC's a pit stop for them on the way somewhere else, and they can't even get here. They never took off from their original departure point. I don't know. I'm talking myself into the idea that this is possible. It's not going
to
happen.
It's a good thing you're not trying to get to Bangor, Maine to see Julie the Cat Gaffney play a little puck. You know what I mean?
I don't specifically, but I like that you said it. All right. Here's what I wanted to talk about here, buddy. And this the initial story that came out, I guess it was yesterday, Darren Revell had a tweet about payroll and the AAF, right? The Alliance of American Football. And his initial thing was, no, this is fine. They didn't make payroll in week one, but it was due to some glitch in their new software or something like that, which actually is very reasonable. I know that sounds flimsy, but I know people that work in payrolls, and that stuff happens. When you have a rollout that big of that many people, glitches early on, a perfectly normal thing for a startup company. Well, enter the report, though, from David Glenn of The Athletic. And he claims that, or not claims, but he's reporting, the AAF needed a $250 million investment from Carolina Hurricanes majority owner Tom Dundon just to make that payroll. This wasn't some glitch. This was the original funding is all gone, and Dundon now not only has invested, quote-unquote, in the league, he's now the majority investor in the league. He's just named the chairperson because he gave them enough to sustain for a while. Yeah, in hard cash, so congrats, Tom Dundon, on your acquisition of the AAF.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like he bailed them out. Now, you mentioned this, but to give a name to the comment, the Alliance's CEO and co-founder is Charlie Ebersole, and I think that's Dick's son. He'd been monitoring the progress of the AAF before committing to being an investor, apparently, and had been in talks with Tom Dundon for a while. He's not terming this a bailout. He's saying this is a buy-in. Basically, that this was happening one way or the other, that the payroll being paid had nothing to do with this. I would say it smells a little fishy to me, at the least. Like you said, I could see a clerical issue happening first time a bunch of guys get paid, but here's what else I know. you know, this has been an issue in other leagues and other football circuits where guys will play and their paychecks don't come, and next thing you know, the league's in big trouble. Not a good look for the AAF, however you want to slice it.
Yeah, when you combine those two things, right, if all that happens is a payroll thing, you know, jerks will make their jokes, like me, which is fine, you know. But when you combine that with, yeah, and all of a sudden a $250 million cash injection was either needed or happened to coincide with that, you can't make payroll on Monday. Tuesday, you know, everybody, you know, this money happens and the guy's named the lead executive to it, or the chancellor, whatever the term is. It doesn't bode well, but they initially seem to have avoided the pitfalls of the old USFL, where some, you know, they promised huge money to stars to kind of woo them away from the NFL experience, whether it was Jim Kelly or otherwise. And that kind of was the you know, the economic shortfall there, where they couldn't pay guys, or some of the owners weren't quite as lofty financially as they may have claimed to. But now we know more, we can vet people. That wasn't an issue for the AAF, at least in theory, because the league owns everybody. Right? There's no, you know, this owner's a billionaire, but this guy's only a regular old stupid millionaire, so they may or may not be able to make payroll. This was all supposed to be very simple. You join the AAF, you sign a 3-year, non-guaranteed, $250,000 deal with a couple of exceptions. Some guys were going to get paid more. So it's interesting to me that this is kind of where we're at, even though initial reviews have been fairly positive, I would say, right?
Yeah, everything's gone very well, really, from an optics standpoint for the league, and the people that are watching seem to be enjoying it. So whether or not it survives, I don't know how much it hinges on if people like it or not. I think people have liked other leagues that didn't last either. I mean, you need eyeballs. You need to attract new people, not just the small group that are going to be watching week in and week out. My takeaway, though, from this story yesterday, and it has nothing to do with the Alliance and really nothing to do with the investor himself, but I thought about, like, what amount of money – what it must be like, you know, if a friend of mine was in a bind and said, man, I needed some money. I need you to help me out here. Bail me out, not literally from jail, but from this terrible situation. Or maybe it is literally from jail.
Maybe it's jail.
And it's like, I need $1,500 or like some crazy amount of life-changing money to me where you're like, okay, I don't have a lot of money, but I guess I could give you this money and be a hero for a day and we'll figure everything else out later. Like, can you imagine that number of money, like monies being $250 million for
what
you?
What I'll do is I'll just take this $250 million and write you a cashier's check. Is that okay if I just hand it over to you? It really is unfathomable.
What amount of money could I call you up for, like a no questions asked? Like, I call you up tonight and I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. I'll pay you back. But I need, and I like, if you could bring it with you to West
X.
Palm tomorrow.
Like, the most I could just, like, get a hold of, and I'd obviously be in need of getting it back, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to pay you back, but it's just like you're hooking me. You don't know why, but I need to be bailed out.
Because you're my buddy? I would say probably $5,000 is the most I could reasonably get a hold of.
See, that's a silly amount to hook me. I might have to pull that and ask you for that. But, yeah, like, and you can't just give someone $5,000 without getting it back. But my point is, okay, so we're in that range, right? Like,
yeah.
$5,000. This guy can do that with $250 million.
That's what his $5,000 is, $250 million. Oh, right. That's unfathomable. Speaking
amazing.
Of unfathomable, Antonio Brown's behavior has been pretty ridiculous. Also have some comments updated from Todd Reirden about what's going on with the Capitals right now. A lot of moving parts. We'll have those couple things for you next on Grant and Danny here on the Fan. Grant and Danny here on the Fan. Got some updated comments from Capitals coach Todd Reirden regarding some of the behind-the-scenes machinations going on with the Washington Capitals. It sounds like moves are afoot, GP. But first, wanted to circle back into this. We've got some audio. Why don't you lead us through this here? Drew Rosenhaus talking about his client Antonio Brown, who is doing Drew and those who would represent Antonio Brown zero favors with his public antics.
Yeah, and he hasn't really done his agent any favors all offseason. He's making Drew Rosenhaus' job, Danny, really difficult because Rosenhaus is going to have to find a suitor for Antonio Brown. He'll be able to do so because Brown is the best wide receiver in the National Football League, but the number of suitors is going to be way fewer than it should be because of his actions and the fact that he quit on the Steelers at the end of the season. Starting here, Drew Rosenhaus says that the player and the team are amicably splitting up and they're on good terms. Here's what he said via ESPN.
Antonio has had really nine great years with the Steelers organization. He's really had a historic career for them. And this was really a way to move on in a very positive light. Antonio had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Rooney, clear the air on a lot of issues. They shook hands. They gave each other a hug. And both sides agreed that at this stage of Antonio's career, it is in his best interest, in everyone's best interest, Antonio, the Steelers at this juncture, to move forward and work on a trade.
Yeah, it is. It's in everybody's best interest right now. That's nice agent speak.
And yeah, you know what that is? That's indoor cycling as a form of exercise with classes focusing on endurance, strength, intervals, high intensity, and recovery. It's spin, Danny. That's what it is.
Yes, that is correct. Now, the many parts are true. That's what makes good spin so good. Here's the true part. He's had a historic career. He's had a Hall of Fame first 9 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been the best receiver in football for the majority of those. I'd say probably 5 of the 9 years he's been as good as there is. He is a star. He is great. He has been great. Will he be great in the future? I don't know, but he's got enough track record, enough in the bank where a watered-down 65-70% version of him is still better than most people. You know, there are a number of guys have had that kind of career arc. You think of a Steve Smith, for example, towards the end of his career. Still very effective. Not quite 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns effective, but still pretty damn good. But Brown, to call this amicable, I mean, good heavens. Good heavens. I'm sure when I got dumped, it was mutual. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way.
Well, here's where it's mutual. Brown doesn't want to be there, and he's become such a pain in the ass that the Steelers are saying, we don't want you here either. So I guess they agree on that, right?
Yeah.
I want to leave. I don't like being here anymore. I don't want to deal with Ben Roethlisberger. And you guys like Juju Smith-Schuster as much as me. And the Steelers are going, you're annoying. Go away. So that's where it's mutual. Drew Rosenhaus on ESPN also talking about the fact that he thinks clubs are going to be lining up, that there will be clamoring for Brown's services based on, again, the quality of the player.
I can tell you what I know about Antonio, and that he is a great competitor, an all-time great player, a great teammate, a great person. And as far as another team, you know what? We'll see how that shakes out. I really don't want to put any criteria out there. That'll be between the Steelers and the teams that are interested in Antonio. I would imagine that there will be a lot of teams interested in trading for him. It is very rare to get an all-time great like this in a trade. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for another football team. I'm sure they will jump on it.
You buy that? I do. I buy that it's rare. You know, this doesn't happen often. These kinds of falling outs don't always occur. You can't usually acquire a guy that's this good, but there's a reason that he's available, right? It's his own doing.
Well, I completely agree with you. Yeah, I mean, it is very rare that a guy this good is available in the prime of his career, as he's about to be 31 years old coming off of the years that he's had. But it's also rare that a guy seemingly loses his head off the field in the span of 2 calendar years. I mean, he's had a downward spiral that is, you know, we can make light of this or we can call it what it is. It's alarming, especially with what we know about head trauma and issues guys have. And I don't think I'm, you know, overstating this. His actions, to me, are the actions of people that are, like, screaming for attention. There's just a fine line between a guy acting like a silly goose and then, you know, Everson Griffin in Minnesota, where he was getting evaluated and having some real issues. And Antonio Brown's not there yet, but my point is that the lane that divides those two cars is not that massive. There's people that are worried about him right now, and the way he's acting doesn't give you a whole lot of confidence that he's in a good place mentally, and Drew Rosenhaus has to figure that out as someone that's supposedly in the player's corner and make sure that he can get him placed in an organization where they can get him into a better overall mental spot and where he can feel happy and ready to play football again, because that was not the case in Pittsburgh. Speaking of the Steelers, though, they got to make the deal. You know, Rosenhaus and Antonio Brown don't get to make the trade here. The Steelers have the power. They can send him wherever they want to. They've got to find the dance partner. Rosenhaus talked about that.
Right now, the Steelers, they're running the whole trade effort. Antonio's under contract, and they have the ability to talk to other teams right now and find the best deal for them. And we hope they get a great amount of compensation. We want everybody to win here. this is the kind of thing where certainly it'd be great for the Steelers to get what they would deem to be fair compensation for Antonio, and for Antonio to find a new team at this point and reap all the positives from that.
Grant, you covered this league and the Redskins for years. You could speak to this better than I could, so I guess I'm asking you here. Obviously the preferred position would be that Rosenhaus goes out and does what he does, which is gin up interest for his client and tries to go get a trade. How unusual is this where the team says, no, thank you, we'll handle it, we don't want you? Because couldn't they actually potentially get more or get a better offer if Rosenhaus is kind of beating the bushes for them?
Yeah, I wouldn't have had a huge problem if this situation started with just a contract dispute or something, having the player and the agent go out and bring deals to the table, if you've both decided it's over. You know, the problem with doing that, see Kirk Cousins in Washington a couple off seasons ago, they didn't want him and his agent going out and seeking a trade because you don't know if ultimately he's going to end up yours or he's not, you know, want to damage the relationship in some irreparable way. But you've had this meeting, and you now know he's not going to be here, and the new goal is what? To get the most back, wouldn't you say? To get the best possible
right,
package?
Right, absolutely.
I think the only reason you don't is there's animosity, and you're saying, no, you don't get to dictate anything else. You've dictated every part
we'll
of
tell
these
you,
terms.
Right.
We're done with what you want. Now it's our turn to tell you where you're going. And I think part of it is, I don't know that the Steelers are as petty as some other teams might be, but I don't know that you want to send him to the New England Patriots. You don't want to send him to the Baltimore Ravens or, mm-hmm. or some team within your division you're vying with. I think they would love to find an NFC team on the opposite coast.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of people are saying
San Francisco, right, yeah.
But you don't play him that often, and what he does doesn't matter that much to you.
Well, reminds me, not the exact same, but, you know, just in terms of scenarios, where Dell Demps, now former general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans, was fired over this about how the whole thing went down. But I'm not trading with the Lakers because your agent said so. I'm not doing that. Screw you. We're not just here to be a farm system for the Lakers. Kind of a similar situation. We'll handle the trade. Thanks very much. We'll do the best thing for the New Orleans Pelicans, who you're not treating very well at this point, but I've still got to put a basketball team out there. And you might call it petty, but to me, I get that. I get that line of thinking where it's going, no. We don't just exist to provide you with whatever opportunity you want. We decide. We're
exactly
the ones. We've got to shoot the message kind of across the bow to everybody else that's still there. Hey, we got to jump, but GP, I want to give you some updated comments from Todd Reirden in the wake of Devontae Smith-Pelly being put on waivers. It sounds like a lot is afoot with the Capitals. We'll do that next. Chad Dukes versus the World is up next. I can tell you this. They'll be talking to James Brown at some point on the show. That's pretty cool. Always good to get JB in tow. Last segment for us here, Grant and Danny. Grant's already in West Palm Beach. Dar and I hope to join him there. We'll give you an update on our flight status here in a moment. But, GP, speaking of updates, this whole Devontae Smith-Pelly on waivers for the Capitals is actually fascinating. There's some moving parts here. Let me read to you from Isabel Khachoudian's story in the Washington Post. The team initially planned to place for Dmitry Yashkin on waivers at noon, which was why he wasn't on the ice for the team's practice in Toronto at 11 a.m. Smith-Pelly was on the ice for the start of practice, but he then left early, apparently told that the organization had changed its mind and decided to waive him and not Yashkin. Right now, there is a lot of movement going on, especially for teams that are salary cap strapped, like we are, Reirden said. Earlier in the day, we made the decision to put Yashkin on waivers, and we changed our mind and were notified during practice. We made that adjustment, and now Devontae has been put on waivers. He goes on, this is the one I wanted to get your take on here. That is a little bit of what is going on behind the scenes here, and that is something that we'll obviously keep between ourselves at this point, especially with the amount of stuff that's going on in the league right now. Basically saying, there's a lot of moving parts with the Capitals right now, and just on its surface, clearing the way for Yashkin to play a little bit more doesn't seem like that big of a move, but it implies something else is about to go down, right?
Definitely does. Yeah, it sounds to me like they are talking trades. It could be that a trade is imminent. Certainly that there's got to be another move at play here. He didn't say that move was made in a vacuum. It sounds like actually the opposite of that. How weird is it, though, that they made the decision on Yashkin and then yanked Smith-Pelly off the ice and changed their mind? The only way that would happen is if something else changed.
External force, right?
They're talking with other teams about. Because these decisions are not made on a whim as you're about to take the ice. Which guy are we getting rid of for the rest of the season, losing the rights to on our team? Dmitri Ashkin or Devontae Smith-Pelly? That's a decision that's months and months in the making. I mean, you've spent weeks trying to determine which of those two guys is more deserving of ice time and starts and, you know, being a part of the roster. You don't just decide that when you wake up in the morning like Colton handing out roses and then decide, you know what, never mind, I'm going to give it to this other person. That's not the way this works. So to me, it says that something behind the scenes, and we don't know what it is yet, but I'm guessing we'll find out in the next day or two and hopefully before crashing the net with Tom Daley tonight at 6:30, the only all-cap show in Washington, D.C. Make sure you're listening. I'm guessing something changed as far as the dialogue they're having with other teams, where they figured that they could either get a deal in place if Smith-Pelly was involved on waivers, or that, more importantly, I think more accurately, maybe Dmitri Ashkin is a tradable commodity, or you're going to trade a piece where you think Ashkin's a better replacement. It's hard to speculate.
It seems so strange, though, that a trade would involve Ashkin. Right? I mean, simply because he's not getting a sweater every night. He's kind of in and out of the lineup. There's been, you know, people have liked what they've seen from him, obviously.
Honestly, I wouldn't be that surprised. I was actually talking the other day with Al Koken about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to steal his thoughts. I'll give him the credit. But he kind of turned me on to this, and I think he's 100% right. Yashkin screams playoff body to me. And the league is changing a bit. And, you know, we went back and forth on this some. But, you know, the speed game has become more important than ever, and teams can just fly and get up and down the ice. But there's still something to a heavy, sturdy forecheck with a fourth line that can be big and physical.
Yeah, 6'2", 220 is 6'2", 220. I mean, it's not like
– exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that matters.
So Smith-Pelly at times in his Caps career has led them in hits. You know, he had I remember an epic game in Pittsburgh right around Easter last year where he had 8 hits in the game, I think it was, and – you know, going into the playoffs was just hitting everything that moved. But Yashkin, it's not even that he's physical or hits people. It's his net front presence. It's that he moves defenders out of his way. He's tough to get out of the crease at times. He kind of does some of those dirty playoffy type things. A lot like Devontae Smith-Pelly. He's just played less this year.
So it is interesting. I mean, I'm hoping I'm with you and that something happens before a Tom Daley show tonight, crashing the net right here on 106.7 The Fan. But to me, this says, and I'm struggling to put the pieces together, whether it's Yaskin as part of a deal or Yaskin will be promoted and he fits better in their mind with whomever's the new running mate for him or line mate for him, or he needed to be in the lineup so that he could be part of a deal, maybe for a defenseman. Who knows certainly what's out there, but it is fascinating that he was off the ice, then they put him back on and they yanked Smith-Pelly off the ice. This is very Otto Porter-y, right? Just a few days before. He's not getting traded. We like Otto Porter. He's part of our future. He's our franchise. 3 days later, he's moved. Pre-game warm-ups, he's pulled off and said, ah, by the way, pack your stuff. You're going to Chicago.
All right.
Man, oh, man.
See, I mean, again, we have no idea. So speculating here is difficult and borderline impossible. What I know is this doesn't happen. And it particularly with an organization like the Capitals, they do everything right. You know, they're very first class. That a guy like DSP has been a pretty model citizen for them. They're not trying to jerk him around and make him look bad. And that's brutal to be on the ice and get pulled off, to be told you're put on waivers when you think you just dodged that bullet. That's terrible. So something changed. Something happened. They didn't just decide they were going to change their minds because something happened in the first few minutes of practice.
No, one last thing I want to, just a quick gear shift before we let Chad take over here, buddy. Anthony Rendon spoke to media today, and he's someone I'm looking forward mightily to catching up with if we do ever get down to West Palm Beach. But the perception is always that Boris drives all these things, where you're talking about the agent that drives stuff. Here's a couple nice quotes that he had. I want to get your quick reaction to this. If both parties can be happy, Rendon talking contract extension potential with the Nationals. If both parties can be happy, then we'll see. If not, then we'll see what happens. We had more discussions this winter, but I can't say all the cards out on the table for y'all. I got to leave y'all on suspicion. But everyone has the misconception, this is what I want to get to, of this, is that they think we work for Scott. Like, no, that's not the way it works. I'm telling him how it's going. We've gotten some jibber-jabbers before, too. So, like, I'm paying him. Nah, that don't fly with me. I thought that was interesting.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think that tells you his point is, and we can clarify and ask him when he comes on our show, but I think what he's saying is it's not like because I'm with Scott Boris, I'm not allowed to re-sign. I'll do what I want to do. If I want to re-sign, then I tell him I want to resign. He's not going to tell me I can't and I have to be a free agent. That's how I take that.
Me too. And again, there are paths. Ryan Braun did it. Steven Strasburg did it. So it can be done. The agent works for you. He can be the guy that gets you the most out of the team that you're currently with, or he can get you the most on the open market. But that remains to be seen. Real quick before we go, Dar, update us. Are we taking off or not?
Hey, so it looks like not only are we taking off on time, as I just talked with CK about, we're arriving early.
Unbelievable.
What?
I'm sure.
I just don't believe it. But we are headed to the airport.
Is that actually going to happen?
In a matter of moments.
I just got an update that not only is our flight departing on time, our arrival has been moved from 6:11 to 6:05.
And there you have it.
I'll be furious if that happens. I don't want you guys to miss the flight, but I do want you to sit in the airport for 2 hours and get delayed.
Grant, we might see you tonight. We might not, buddy. It has been a treat. I hope we're down in West Palm the next time you and me talk.
You and me both. Hope to see you guys here.
For Jeeps, for Tommy, for Dar, CDVDW is up next. For what does it mean and what is it good for? 4.5 hours next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.